Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
It is so hard to say that we have met expectations within 1 year. You need 3, 4, 5 years. And unfortunately, CSMs don't do a very good job of sticking with one account for 5 years.
And every time there's a new customer success leader in an organization, we know there's a new strategy, there's new priorities, there's a new focus. And everyone wants to put their fingerprint on something and do it inherently different than it's been done before.
How do we get these people trained and retrained and continually retrained when everybody's fucking leaving and changing on a consistent basis?
So I think, you know, thinking more about being the shepherd or steward of information that then can drive the right outcome for you and kind of put you as the messenger into the other workflows of those departments is kind of a way I've seen, you know, a nice way to kind of build a bit of a step change through more tactical execution, if that makes sense.
How do you tactically do that, Alex? I like that.
But we've trained the sales team basically to do success planning about what the customer wants to achieve in year one. From a statistic perspective, we 6x'd our average contract value with this motion, and our win rate went from like 20% to 33% once we implemented it. But again, right? But it's a total time suck adventure, bridge to nowhere, I think, for a CSM to be really chewing their teeth on that.
Our CSMs, I don't want them to be heroes.
Hello, everybody. It is Eclipse time, not for our listeners, but for us, the hosts. We are all here. And we're waiting for the skies to get dark. John just left us. I don't know where John just.
He's scared of the dark. That's the problem.
Yeah. I think he just went to go stare at the sun.
It is pitch black here in Austin, Texas. Sorry, Josh. It is.
Josh, we're not dark yet.
It just keeps getting darker. It's crazy. It is 1:30 p.m.
Wow.
That's wild.
It really is pitch black. You showed us a second ago and it was like, yeah.
I know.
Even darker. Like I used to be able to see even across the street. I can't even see the yard anymore. Now my like walkway lights are coming on outside that are, this is freaky, man.
I'm excited.
Michael, where are you?
Well, you know what? Listen, we've actually trained, we've conditioned our listeners who are now our guests to derail us. They're so used to Christy and John derailing the conversation with non sequiturs, that Michael's just jumping in and going into to. You know,
I invited him
details.
Here for the
I love
BS.
It. He's all about the BS. Michael, I invited
Alex
you here
can
for
be
some
here
CS.
For the CS.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm here for both. With a side of BS as well. Yeah.
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 No, we're talking about how we prefer the BS, Josh.
I think, Chris, you were saying we should rename this BS and BS, but that was.
Yeah,
that was just BS.
Just BS.
That's more succinct. That's true. That's good. Marketing. Nailed it.
Straight up BS.
John, what are you working on right now? Your face, you're either farting or you're working on something very serious.
Yes, you're back. Your audio is back, John.
Jesus Christ, everybody.
Well,
peace be with you.
I'm going to introduce. So I'm Josh Hector, founder and CEO of Update AI. I have with me today Christy Faltarusso, my co-host extraordinaire, and John Johnson. John, you going to say hi?
Hey, guys.
Hey, cool.
I wasn't allowed to say hi.
No, because then it becomes, hi, I'm Christy Faltarusso,
KFA
Enterprises.
I've
built my career over
the
last 12
great.
Years.
Wow, great. Okay, we have two more friends on
today.
Would you
like to
buy us?
Introduce them. Okay, so we've got two friends. We have Mr. Michael Forney. Michael is the VP of CS at Responsive. Michael lives in Austin, Texas, which is why he's getting the Eclipse a little bit before we do.
It is full on nighttime. Outside.
Reporting live.
Cannot see.
Reporting live
from the dark.
Crazy. I've been through eclipses before, but nothing like this. I was like, it's not going to get that dark.
No, this
is
like
full on nighttime.
If you think about it, like 200 years ago, somebody would have been accused of being a witch if this were to happen.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like this, like.
I feel like a witch.
Well,
you'd be my guest too. And then we also have Alex Farmer from the other. Yeah. So we've got Michael's behind us because John, Christy, and I are East Coast. And then Alex is way ahead of us, 5 hours ahead in London.
The future.
Did you already have your eclipse time?
Well, we're actually eclipse free. So my eclipse is. We're eclipse free since. We're eclipse free since, like, I want to say like 2013. It doesn't rhyme, but I did see a solar eclipse here in the UK back then, but our eclipse is, it's just dark. It's 7:30 PM. So
it's
dark. Michael, me too. It's dark. Wow. Super cool.
But so, there is life after the eclipse. We are going to survive.
Maybe you'll let us know, Michael. Let us know.
Yeah.
If you cut off.
early
if you start ascending
system.
Into heaven.
the purge, total eclipse.
Pretty sure that's not where I'm going, but I'll let you know one way or the other.
Yeah, please do. That would be good.
So just to round out Alex's intro, Alex Farmer is the CCO and CRO of Nasaza. Did I get the pronunciation of that right?
Just Alex? Yes. Let's go with yes.
Okay.
It feels like a no.
Yeah, plug it.
No, well, I'll tell the long story that nobody cares about. I say Nasaza because I have an obnoxious American accent, but we are a Swiss German based company in Zurich, and they all say, I won't do the accent, but they pronounce it slightly differently due to the locale that they're from. So it's whatever you want to call it.
Need to hear it.
Do they pronounce in a very firm, adamant way? Like,
yes.
Nasaza.
Sure. Yes. Let's go. Sure. Okay. You did great.
Oh, okay.
Good job, Josh.
It's okay. Also pleased to be here.
I am German. I have a German passport. I have license to say those things.
Well, yes, and I don't, to be clear. So that's great. I'll be here to correct your pronunciations throughout the session today. So thanks.
Thank you. So we actually Michael and Alex are very kindly filling in here. And well, they've leveled up. They've helped us level up here. And I'm not just saying that. We were going to have a different guest on for today. But she bailed on us this morning, because she had promised her daughter that she would take her to go see the eclipse.
Which is the right thing to do.
Which is, I guess.
Hey, it's the right thing to do, Josh.
Yeah.
It's okay. Eclipse is not as important as eclipse.
Yeah. But so then we had these guys fill in for us, and it's great because we've got some really cool stuff that I want to talk about with both of them. So, you know, we know that this is a tough year in CS for everybody. All leaders are being pushed and stretched and pulled and tugged and poked and pried. And so you've got some pretty concrete and challenging goals in the organization. And I actually want to ask you, I probably could have asked you this before pressing the record button, but wanted to ask if you'd be open to sharing some of the stuff that you're focused on right now. And then we've got some CS leadership extraordinaires here, plus myself, and you know, maybe kind of can talk through some of the stuff that you're going through.
Yeah, I would be happy to, and thank you for inviting me here. I feel honored and a little starstruck seeing each of you. Don't let it go too much to your heads, but at least some. You guys are famous on the CS circuit.
Among the five people in this room, we are well known.
And our seven listeners.
We're all each other's biggest fans. It's just really just this kind of like, yeah. Please continue.
No, I mean, I would say listening to this podcast has actually really helped ground me in a lot of ways. Because I think, you know, being in sometimes in a leadership position, especially in a remote environment, it can feel like you're on an island. And it can be a little lonely. And you're like thinking through problems and challenges, and without like a really strong network of folks that you're just always around, you're not having that water cooler talk. So this podcast has actually helped me quite a bit just to hear like the real stories of what other people are, you know,
thanks,
are
Ben.
Going through. And I appreciate that. And I'll keep listening because of that.
So, well, wait till the end of the episode before you make any promises. We'll see how badly we fucked this up for you.
I'm a commit kind of guy, so I'm gonna go ahead and put my money on it because
you'll listen to it.
So I'm gonna jump right into
eclipses
this.
Only.
Yeah. Let's
get Responsive.
Yes.
Michael has an incredible product and a great group of CSMs, and he's getting XX percentage GRR. And I'll let you fill in the XX percentage, Michael. Hopefully you're able to.
Yeah. Well, we need to. I don't know how much we can talk strong, you know, talk concrete numbers. You know, we're still a private company, but you know, we're getting industry best practice GRR, and it's quite a bit better than some of our others in the space, which is great. But there's still room to grow. Like there's about, you know, maybe 3 or 4 percentage points that we still want to get up to be industry like best and top.
And so you're trying to go from like 65 to 70% GRR, is that it?
No, it's a little bit more than that.
Michael, you're okay. Our mental math is so bad, we can't figure out the number that you can't say. So it's secret.
He's doing well. There's no shortcomings here. He's trying to go from the A to the A+. So let's just put it that way, which makes it even more difficult.
That is a good way of saying it. Yes, because when you're really scratching at that level, here's the conversation I have with the COO of my company all the time is that, you know, this the results that we're getting, you know, we believe that they are a good combination of solid product, solid team, you know, team and technology behind it. But what others in this space, at least this is what we're finding, others in this space are getting similar results with kind of like a, what we call a hero CSM team. Like they're doing everything and a little bit of everything. But in order to unlock the remaining, you know, 4 or 5%, we need to work really cross-functionally and achieve like the mission, the company mission of customer success. It's not just the department's mission of customer success. The whole company has to do it. So the product has to be working. The team has to be working. The onboardings have to be great. The marketing has to be good. Like everything has to be, you know, well orchestrated. So I don't have all the solutions. That's why I'm here actually, to find out, you know, how are others in this space really working cross-functionally so that you're not just using your own tools and your own toolkit, but you're leveraging the power of the entire company behind the mission of customer success to really pull off those expert numbers.
What are the symptoms right now that you see that make you say that you're not getting that company-wide mission of CS?
I would say we are getting company-wide CS up to a certain level. And we're just always looking to see how we can unlock more of that. So, but symptoms of, let's say, like common churn. I mean, I think I've heard about it on this podcast and others that, you know, M&A tends to be a really big slice of our churn, which, you know, is some degree in your hands and some degree out of your hands, right? I mean, sometimes Google acquires a company and you're like, well, there goes that customer. And then other times, you know, you can actually defend because you can have materials and assets prepped in advance to help show like why you are the right company for the expansion, for like a multi-business enterprise, things like that. We have some customers that end up just going, we call it going manual. They just do what they do the hard way. So we have quite a bit of that. I think, you know, we have the same symptoms that most other companies have, which is, you know, M&A is a big slice. Customers are just going to cut the cost and go manual and just eat it on, like, they know they're not going to get as much productivity out of it, but there is more of a tangibility on their P&L sometimes when they can just knock some software off. Beyond that, I think we have a real challenge with customer turnover. You know, we invest all this time and effort and money into onboarding and training a team, and then they get another job somewhere else. And sometimes it's all of them who leave, you know, over the course of, like, let's say 2 years. And so we have to.
Has that become worse in the past 9 months? I mean, are people getting riffed now?
Yes, definitely. We have, we sell into a lot of proposal management groups. And unfortunately, proposal teams are often, you know, put on riffs, even though, you know, we believe they should not be. I mean, they're contributing directly to revenue and they're operating at extreme efficiencies. But yeah, it does happen. So sometimes it's nice because they'll move to another company and they'll bring the software over there. But we deal with that challenge quite a bit. So, you know, we're aware of some of those challenges. It's just like, okay, we have to like pay attention to them, find them, discover them, and then put the motions in place to be like, okay, we have to like put a program in place for those things. I'm not giving you any answers here. I'm just
No. I mean, listen, this is therapy.
You like, answered the question that Josh asked you, which was, what are the symptoms of what you're seeing, and what are you trying to solve for?
Yeah. So who's got the crystal ball?
This is like therapy. Basically, you're just going to keep talking yourself into the response, and then you're going to just be enlightened by the end of this.
So how does that make you feel?
Yeah. How does it make you feel? No, but the other good thing is, by the way, Michael, like, even if we get nothing out of this, our listeners will, because it shows that there's many people out there that have the same challenge, right? So you are, you're making others, I'm sure, feel very like comforted right now in having these other similar challenges. I mean, I could ask you, like, what do you think is the answer? Like, what would be your magic wand as a next step?
That is a great question. I don't know what the magic wand answer is. And I don't think there ever is a singular silver bullet to anything. You know, everything is just, it's a giant It's a giant Lego construction. There's different pieces, different colors, different sizes of things to make the whole masterpiece look like something. So I think what I'm most interested in hearing, you know, we can talk all the day long about like, oh, you need to work cross-functionally. And I love asking people like, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
what does strategy mean? What meetings are you having? What is the topic of those meetings? Who are you meeting with? And like, what is the frequency of those sessions? You know, those kinds of things. I love getting those kind of tangibles because it helps me a lot. We have some good cross-functional, we have good cross-functional engagement. We do a bi-weekly here to talk about, you know, customers who are either at risk or, you know, have some sort of significant thing happening, either something very good about them or something very challenging. And then we go through our like churn forecast, renewal forecast, all that kind of stuff. We do review all of that. And we have a lot of new players at our company, particularly in our customer marketing function, which I think is a big piece that is probably one that we can really lean on in the next 12 to 18 months to help us amplify the right messages to our customers. Because I think that's probably one area where we could use some development, is a lot of the communication that customers receive is, you know, one-to-one communication from CSMs. But again, it only goes as far as what the CSM can produce. And it would be better if we can be leveraging all, you know, shreds of customers, helping to sell their insights and their outcomes to other customers. So, I mean, that's just one idea, but anyway, I'm rambling here.
Christy a minute ago started going to the notepad. So Christy's been taking notes and she's ready to pounce now. Go, Christy.
I'm not ready to pounce, but that is interesting that you caught me catching my little notepad over here.
Are you ready to go?
No. Okay. So I would say, listen, there's always going to be a laundry list of things that we're going to see, right? And the ones that you all rattled off are ones that we are, like, at Client Success, things that I struggle with as well. M&A is our largest challenge because our ICP of who we sell to, those companies are ripe for being acquired, right? And I've navigated M&A when the companies I'm supporting are the companies acquiring other businesses, when those are growth strategies and those are growth motions for us, right? Are we getting enough value from the parent company that we can now penetrate these subsidiaries or these sister companies or whatever, depending on the model? At Client Success, I can't solve for the M&A that happens in our business, right? It's not going to be a good use of my time. So you talked about some of the other things. And so one of the strategies that I'm focused on is really dialing in on what can I control and influence versus what can I not? And instead of trying to drive cycles around M&A, I ignore it. Not that I ignore it entirely, but it's just not something that I know. Even if I won one more deal, it is not going to move me enough percentage points to have a meaningful impact on the business. So I really started to figure out, well, what are the things that I can influence and things that will have material impact? And so one of the things that we're working on with our customers right now is a re-onboarding motion. So to your point, so many of our customers we've seen either turnover in leadership, especially Josh, to your point, this year, it's been the highest it's ever been. People coming and going almost every 3 to 6 months. And every time there's a new customer success leader in an organization, we know there's a new strategy, there's new priorities, there's a new focus. And everyone wants to put their fingerprint on something and do it inherently different than it's been done before, which means for our software, it's almost a reboot. Now, even when that change doesn't happen, companies are evolving, they're growing, your priorities are shifting, which means how you've onboarded a year, 2, 3 years ago probably means that your program looks a little bit different than it does today, right? So we've actually put together this reboot kind of like re-onboarding strategy in place that tackles both of those challenges for us. So trying to find strategies that allows us to have the most amount of impact. So we've started to do things like identify how many of our customers have been with us for over 24 months and actually proactively look at their analytics around usage, adoption, what are some of the key ways that they're using the platform, and come up with a curated list and say, you know what, we're going to go after these customers in this order based on renewal dates, based on adoption, and actually start to make a really focused program around re-onboarding targeting, right? And offer it at no cost and just say, hey, listen, it's been a while since you guys had configured Client Success. I think this is a good opportunity for us to do a level set and We have a program in place that will do this platform success audit to kind of let you know what does your deployment look like against best practice. And then if you want to engage in the re-onboarding, we're going to help you. And here's what that looks like. And so we're pitching it. We make it very clear. This is an investment we're making in your business, in you, no cost. And hopefully it helps drives a different outcome and different motion and engagement. The other one that we do is we also leverage this when we do see change in leadership. And so sometimes it's right away, but we do know that a leader's got to come in and probably spend the first 3 months getting their bearings and start to figure out where they want to prioritize. So day one, I'm not pitching it to them, right? So it's also sequencing that appropriately where we build a relationship. Maybe the first couple of weeks, we know that they're there and then come back a couple weeks, maybe a couple months later and say, now that you've gotten yourself situated, we'd love to have this conversation. And here are some of the things that we can offer to help ensure that your deployment mirrors your strategy and not the one that was there before, right? If obviously that's not the one they want to deploy. So those are just two examples of two things that we're seeing where one program designed can tackle those two issues. And obviously from a poor adoption standpoint, if we think about that as a challenge, which it is, and I am confident that every company has a little cohort of customers that struggle with that. So even if I went and said, you know what, we're going to go after these low adoption customers as well, that would be three different risk buckets of customers where we've got this challenge where one program could solve for that. So I think that's how I'm starting to approach this is like, what can I do that's going to be the least amount of work for my team where I'm not reinventing eight wheels to solve eight problems, but where I can take one initiative, rebrand it, remarket it a little bit to solve a specific problem, but the meat of the initiative is the same. And so that's been something that we have found has started to get some good traction with our customers. And we have a whole program around it from the initial even communication and outreach to the platform success audit that we conduct for them through the re-onboarding motion, which is basically a scaled back version of our full onboarding. But we do let them know if you want to go through a full onboarding and you want to start from scratch, that's an option. And so we give them these kind of like, you know, choose your own adventure. But again, it's one program kind of rebranded a couple different ways, solving for these different challenges. And so I've found that that's been the best way for me to tackle that. And obviously these things do require cross-functional support, right? Because sometimes it's product, sometimes it's marketing will help me with that, right? So it's also, you know, how do I lean into the different teams? So to your point with cross-functional collaboration, this isn't one where I leverage my sales relationship that much because these customers are already customers and our sales team is just new logo sales. But if you did work with the sales team on upsells, cross-sells, expansions, anything like that, pull them into this as well because these initiatives could yield, again, additional upside if that's how your product is sold.
I love it.
Christy, is that your own soundboard?
That is not my own soundboard, oh, okay. Alex. I don't cheer. Well, actually, I do cheer for myself. I am my biggest cheerleader.
I only asked you because I brought my own as well. So I was about to hit the air horn, but that's okay. Can I just jump in here quickly? Because I think a lot of great insights I agree with, especially on the M&A point. You know, just to double down on that quickly, if your CS motion is demonstrating value, showing outcomes to the customer, it's your best defense against M&A. So investing the time and kind of the standard CS motion is your kind of moat, let's call it. And I think there's also something to be said for, you know, if you kind of accept it as churn, and when I present it to boards, I'll separate it out and call it non-regretted churn. Makes the number look better. But and I'm surprised at how, please mute now, board members. But I'm very surprised at how often they don't challenge that in my experience, which I find quite interesting. But that's okay. And because, you know, you've already kind of written it off and you're investing in like, you know, activities that provide more value, giving it to the sales rep is kind of like a Hail Mary. Hey, you know, put it in your pipeline. I'll support you, but it's your deal to manage and run. And, you know, best case, you get 25% of those M&As back and they get some big commission, then great. Right. But it's a total time suck adventure, bridge to nowhere, I think, for a CSM to be really chewing their teeth on that. And I think the other point, Christy, from the onboarding program that you mentioned is really important because I think, Michael, you talked about the hero CSM. And obviously for those customers with low adoption that could use re-onboarding, that's going to be where the hero CSM spends all their time not doing customer success work to try and get to a position where they can earn the right to talk about business objectives and outcomes. And in this way, you can kind of ring fence. And Christy, I'm assuming you have a separate onboarding team. That could be an incorrect assumption.
That's an incorrect assumption. I wish.
Soundboard. Womp, womp, womp. Okay,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No. Okay. Right, fine. But I think similarly, though, at least you're differentiating to the customer, like this is onboarding phase and this is not onboarding phase, so that you don't kind of get sucked into the, let me be your technical liaison, you know, partner forever. Just a few more things on the cross-functional challenge that you mentioned. I think the way I like to think about this is kind of like where, you know, if the customer's at the center of the organization, customer success plays a key role in injecting customer information into other departments, right? Whether it's customer marketing, you know, who can do advocacy, you're injecting kind of something that the marketing team needs, right? Which is going to help them generate more leads, et cetera, et cetera. And product and engineering, similarly, I mean, you know, you maybe you're injecting, in our example, we're kind of sending a prioritized list of bugs that's owned by customer support. But if the CSM gets an escalation, they'll throw that onto like a list of priority bugs that we'll send the product team every sprint. And it's pretty tactical, but I'm, you know, I think we used the menu analogy before, you know, I'm taking a platter and kind of giving it and serving this dish hot to the people that need it. And I think for me, I've always seen a much more success in thinking really tactically about like, how can I make this 10% more customer centric based on what you as a team needs, product, engineering, sales, marketing, as opposed to kind of the all hands, let me tell you about all these red accounts meeting, which can kind of be, you know, a meeting with 60 people on it when nobody's really listening. And best outcome, they remember one little anecdote you had from one customer that influences a decision they make in 2 months. Worst outcome, it's a waste of an hour of 60 people's time. So I think, you know, thinking more about being the shepherd or steward of information that then can drive the right outcome for you and kind of put you as the messenger into the other workflows of those departments is kind of a way I've seen, you know, a nice way to kind of build a bit of a step change through more tactical execution, if that makes sense.
How do you tactically do that, Alex? I like that. How do you, like, what's the meeting you set
I live in, you know me well enough. I live in the tactics in the weeds. Let's just leave it there. Tactically, we have a tag in Jira where it's called top 15 bug. And we add that tag to the Jira ticket that we would like to escalate. Now, knowing just quick thing about Nazaza, we are 70 customers and 60 employees. So these tactics work for our level. Of course, to operationalize something a little bit for larger organizations would take a little bit more kind of administration. In larger companies, we, you know, would have a CSM be a product champion for a certain area that aligns to each squad. And then they would join and kind of be the one person or somebody in customer success or in support, depending on kind of where the headcount, you know, which team is larger, would then join each sprint planning for 15 minutes, bring, you know, the 5 bugs that the team has nominated, and then kind of go into their workflow. And I do think this principle of, I also, maybe it's a little bit more admin, but like joining their meetings as opposed to kind of creating the all hands red account review, so you have to join mine, I've always found is a much more effective way to kind of get the change that ultimately we need to drive for our customer. So yes, a tag in Jira is the answer. I'm sure you all listen to this podcast to receive, but there you go.
That's for product. What about for marketing and sales?
We have a field. We in HubSpot, we have a set of advocacy fields. And when a customer says yes, we change the field from no to in progress. And that pings an email to marketing. And then once it's done, it goes to yes. And then it's easy to kind of KPI across the company, which customers are advocates, which aren't. And it helps me now leading a sales team who used to annoy the hell out of CSMs asking for references all the time, but not remembering who I told them about last week. They can self-serve in the CRM, you know, which customer should I use, and at least kind of ask, hey, can you introduce me, as opposed to let me tell you for 30 minutes about each logo type thing. So again, kind of, you know, in taking the workflow of the team that wants the information and trying to kind of get into that as opposed to doing, you know, extra work, let's say.
Michael, can we step back for a second? And I should have prompted you earlier. Can you tell us a little bit about Responsive, but more interestingly about your organizational setup?
Sure. Yeah. So Responsive is a platform to help companies put the best, most accurate, most relevant information in front of the people who need it most, who need to respond to inquiries to their companies. So a lot of times this is going to be pre-sales organizations working on things like RFPs, RFIs, RFQs, DDQs, et cetera, or security teams, you know, responding to question, you know, security questionnaires, those kinds of things. So it has a broad application, and it does, you know, it does go pretty wide across across a customer base once we have a deployment there, and it's a very powerful tool. It's it's probably the best in its space. I mean, I'm a little bit biased, but I mean, if you look at the G2 reviews, like it is, you know, we are exceptional. We have a lot of great lot of great customers. A lot of the Fortune 100 are on there. So we're very fortunate. So the company is very powerful. And my organization, I run customer success, which we do have a separate onboarding and professional services organization. Sorry, Christy. But that is a separate function, mostly because it's so involved. And so you really need a good group of folks with a dedicated leader, you know, really iterating on that process. I'm thankful for the VP that oversees that, because it's, you know, it's a big undertaking on its own. So I oversee all the customer success managers, a CS ops function, as well as all of our customer support, which is all based overseas, offshore. So that all rolls up into me. So it's customer support agents, TAMs, technical account managers, and then all of the CSMs report into me.
And about how many folks is it?
I think at the end of the year, we'll be about 90 in the department.
90. And then what, generally speaking, what's your coverage ratio? About how many accounts are they managing? Ooh,
great question. So we actually changed this a couple of times just in the last 2 years or so. In our enterprise segment, we're targeting about 30 customers per CSM. Mid-market is about 60-ish, which I think is kind of pushing on the upper bounds. We might add some additional capacity to bring that down, because I think getting over 50 just becomes really hectic and hard to manage. I'm sure if any of them are listening, they will welcome that. And then in our SMB team, in fact, Christy, we have somebody on our team who I think you know, who leads our digital efforts. So our SMB is all digital managed. So it's the pooled CSM concept with, I know you hate this, Josh, but a community, a customer community. But
he listens to the shows.
Oh my God. Josh.
I know, but this verifies
Does
it.
Does he look like a liar?
I mean,
like Alex, maybe, but not Michael.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. So it, and for us, I mean, the community was a new motion this last year, and those folks are handling, you know, upwards of 300 customers per CSM, because it's a pooled model. But I will say for a community, it's actually worked really well. We've run almost 50 events just in 6 months last year, digital events, and we have over 40% attendance, and we're getting registrations in the thousands.
That's great.
So, you know, this is just in content that customers are clearly hungry for, that they just hadn't been engaged in this way before. So it is working, at least as far as we can tell. And I know, at least anecdotally, many of our customers have, you know, met each other offline just as a byproduct of being part of the community together.
You should CC Josh on all of those emails so that they can tell him directly how much they love communities.
Yeah. No, just to be clear, I actually love community in the way that you're talking about it. I don't like community where it's like, let's just buy like a forum board.
Yeah.
That's what I'm referring to.
The cable company community, where I have to go through there to find the phone number to cancel. That
right.
Sucks. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. With you. That's what I'm talking about. I love what you're doing, Michael. So Michael, with Christy and Alex, like what resonates and, you know, what they get right, what they get wrong, like, what are you thinking?
Well, so we are doing a flavor of all those things that you guys mentioned. So to your point, Christy, around re-onboarding, this was something that we identified sort of like in the middle part of last year, where we're like, oh, all the knowledge at these places with turnover is completely gone. Like, of course, they're not going to be super excited. They don't even know what this is. So we did invent what we called a PS SOS boot camp, where we can send customers back through that, which is exactly what you described, Christy. So a watered down version of an onboarding, so that they, you know, we can get them, I like to say, re-romanced on the platform, because like they don't know what this thing is. And so we have to get them interested and excited about it. And that's been, I think that has been good. We're just about at a good enough time where we can now pull the data and see like what happened. You know, we put them through a 2 or 3 month program. Where is their data now? So it's on my to-do list to go see if it's actually working. But we believe that it is, and we're going to keep doing it, because there's an obvious gap for it. And if anybody, you know, comes to you and says, oh, I inherited this tool from so-and-so who left the company, and you try to get them to pay to learn it, good luck. They're going to tell you to take a hike, and they're going to go get a free onboarding from another vendor that they don't have to pay for. So anyone out there thinking that you can charge a customer for re-onboarding with a brand new team that doesn't know your tool, don't do that. They're going to walk away. I've seen that. Alex, you're shaking your head. Maybe not every time, but I just don't see, like, if I was told, oh, you have to pay to figure this thing out, I'd be like, no, I'm going to go get a free onboarding from someone else. I don't know if I'm even excited about your tool.
Yeah, I think it depends on how nice to have or like ingrained the tool is in the business. I mean, I've worked in, and I think this is the CSBS bingo. It depends. There you go. Ding, ding, ding. because, I mean, for us, we're a commerce platform. So to rip us out, you have to turn off your business. HR tech, obviously, you stop kind of your HR operation. So I've always found it in companies, you know, more where it's easier to migrate. Absolutely right. And I think sometimes, you know, I've been guilty of relying too much on the fact you can't cancel me. Which is not a great place to be. So I agree with you in principle. It's just tactically sometimes it.
Personally, you can be canceled though.
Yes, good. And
just say the wrong thing on this episode.
I didn't do the accent, okay, Josh? Okay,
haven't canceled Josh yet. I think you're all fine.
Good.
I want to add one thing, just a perspective that I've been kind of processing as we're talking through this. We have something similar at my organization, Michael, at User Testing. This M&A thing has been huge. We recently were merged and acquired, and our customers are going through these substantially. If you don't know, we're in UX research and design space. So we're not necessarily like a nice to have or a need to have. We're kind of somewhere in like the liminal space between that. We also don't necessarily have people like logging into our platform every single day. So like our stickiness metrics are a little bit trickier. There's a little bit more like higher level kind of thinking that we have to go into. And when I was looking at like our key accounts, which are some of our bigger groups within our customer base, we, of course, this, I love this onboarding. We implemented something very similar after, I mean, I'm pretty sure Christy and I talked about this 2 years ago, is how do we get these people trained and retrained and continually retrained when everybody's fucking leaving and changing on a consistent basis, right? But to that point of like higher and wider, one of the things that we found extremely successful, and kind of to your point, Alex, as well, is how ingrained are you in the process? Kind of removing yourself from the software, from the typical, I need to have X number of clicks and X and Y number of logins. But really, like, we spent so much time working with our operations leaders that are building playbooks, that are building process docs, to make sure that our inputs and that our product was baked into their already standardized processes so that every single decision maker, when they're looking through, well, what do we need? Well, yeah, we're going to merge this team, or we're going to hire a new CS leader, we're going to hire a new ops leader. They come in and you hand them their packet and it says, go to User Testing, do these 5 things, right? And so before they even get to that rip and replace, before they even get to that acquisition and look at budgets, they actually have to change the process themselves before they even get to getting rid of us. And most of the time, what we've found is having the opportunity to actually completely remove ourselves from, like, our CSMs, I don't want them to be heroes. They'll be a hero one day, but if that moment of heroics doesn't lead to completely changing the conversation to, let's talk about your operational processes so that we can ingrain ourselves in. And we fly in and do like workshops all of the time. I create workbooks and playbooks for customers in their language, and we host them for them so that there's, you know, the decision has been made before it even gets to the contract stage. And that helps us with kind of that red flag warning to say, if people start coming to us saying like, I don't know when to use you, I don't know how to use you, that's an indicator for us that either somebody's ripped out the process so that we know that we have to engage our executives or our leaders in a different level, or we're just not there yet with the maturity level, right? So when we segment our customers, we have like a maturity model of how ingrained in their process is not just User Testing, but the outcomes that they solve with our platform. So it's not even, it's higher than just goes in and uses it. It is the things that they're doing within our platform is changing the behavior of our customers in the long run.
Something you said earlier though, Josh, you said you were going into accounts, and I know you were visiting a customer a couple of weeks ago up in DC. That is a big motion for us now. I mean, in the post-COVID world, I think we've been slow to get physically in front of customers, but every time we do it, it's like fireworks. You know, it's like there's all these unintended little side meetings that happen and people that you meet just because you're in their offices. Like, I think that's going to be another big way for us to bolster our connections, at least with, you know, strategic customers.
Well, and also, Michael, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, the applicability of the platform is not for one certain department, right? So the value of kind of leveraging the partnership you have, but then why don't you invite the, you know, the ISO response team in the IT department, right? That kind of pivot motion, I imagine, is super valuable for you guys as well.
It is. Yeah. And thankfully we have an account management team that is responsible for all the upsells and cross sells. So there is a lot of like cross talking that goes on where, you know, if we can, you know, if we can penetrate with one department, you know, that's there's obvious then white space on the other departments that we don't know yet. Yeah.
I just think you need AI that brings in the voice of the customer and shares it across the multifunctional organization.
This is what I'm asking
yeah.
for.
Yeah. There's an app for that. There's a website for that. Hey, everybody, it's Josh. I'm taking a quick break from the podcast to tell you a bit about Update AI. I started Update AI to solve two major challenges for CS teams. The first is that we save CSMs 4 to 5 hours per week with our productivity through AI. Secondly, we give leaders a window into all the conversations across each account and the entire portfolio. So we help knowledge transfer. We help increase the coverage model of your CS teams. And we help you detect emerging patterns in what your customers are telling your CSMs across all the risks, product feedback, advocacy moments, and expansion opportunities. So come check us out at www.updateai. It's completely free to sign up and trial. Okay. So I want to pivot the conversation actually now to Alex. Alex, you and I were talking this morning and I found your approach really interesting and said, hey, come on and share it with the rest of us. So, and Michael, maybe this will be something that can inspire you as well. Alex, you were CCO, you are CCO, you were promoted to CRO, you're some combination of the two, and you've set up your pre-sales motion to be something that will set up your post-sales motion to be most successful. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So, yeah, it's been an interesting 6 months. I made the change September 1st. So we have kind of two quarters done. It's been, I think my hairline's receded in the last 6 months more than it has the rest of my life, but that's okay. My eyes are down here. Please don't look up here. So it's been really interesting. And I think maybe I could caveat all of this by saying, you know, I have a sales team of two reps and two SDRs. So to do change management takes, you know, a 2-hour training session and isn't like a big kind of enterprise motion. So it's easy to kind of test, learn, experiment. Context-wise, we as a business, we're a travel tech company. We sell basically think Shopify for travel agencies or tour operators. So bringing all of their products online so you can book your one trip in a single basket. That's what our software does. And we had been kind of in between selling to big enterprises and much more like SMB type customers. We had a bit of a summit back in like early 2023. We kind of came up with a plan, you know what, we need to really start moving up market because we're like burning the candle on both ends, blah, blah, blah. So the kind of precursor to all of this unification was we canceled all of the simplification. We canceled or deleted the bottom three of our six product plans. So we had three. We raised the price of the entry-level plan that remained. We doubled it. And we kind of transitioned from a more transactional motion to a much more enterprise value selling motion. And the reason I'm kind of going back this far is because that's what we needed to better align a sales organization that had been targeted on velocity, sales cycle length, and things that really just encourage, you know, shortcutting and fast deal close on smaller price points, which then did not align to a customer success motion that we had quite a complex product that has a separate onboarding team that takes 2 to 3 months, and a customer success motion that's really trying to kind of quantify business outcomes, which, to be fair, is easier than for some organizations because we are literally a commerce platform. So I can see how much money you're making. I can see your conversion rate. I have a direct tie to revenue because money comes through the platform, right? So we had a real misalignment in terms of how we went to market and how we took care of customers. So in the last 6 months, we've done a few things. One, we had kind of this big summit with marketing, sales, previous sales leadership, and CX team, and really sat down and zoomed all the way back. It wasn't so much an ICP exercise. It was basically, what are the 5 business objectives our customers are trying to achieve? And that's where we started from. Our website, if you can spell the name of our company after hearing Josh pronounce it so correctly, is not updated yet. That's kind of in the works and should be done in the next month. But it will have the classic, like, you know, the product drop down and then the solution drop down, which will be increase your revenue, optimize your, you know, manual processes, increase conversion rate, whatever. But that has all been stuff that we were talking about in the post-sale motion for quite a long time. So there was just kind of this unification to make sure that our marketing was not doing kind of fancy, pointless brand marketing, but rather direct demand gen focused on business outcome. And then the sales team will kind of go from there. The discovery process is all interviews about the company, right? We're not doing any demos. We minimize demos. We refuse to talk to the IT person. I mean, I'm kind of teaching basic sales techniques, but, you know, it's been a learning experience for me. But I think the most important thing is that we actually do discovery and value selling in a success plan. So the marketing material is talking about hypothetical value that gets the right fit customer talking to a sales rep. But we've trained the sales team basically to do success planning about what the customer wants to achieve in year one. Our solution proposal starts with a success plan. We won't do a demo until the executive sponsor says, yes, these are our business objectives. And it's a very elegant handover motion to the CSM, because then the success plan that, at least in my experience, they struggle to kind of find the lane between the onboarding team to talk about in the first 3 months is actually already done. The onboarding team can then set the system up with success in mind. So you're connecting back to the business objective. And the CSM has a very easy kind of handover to say, hey, you know, these business objective, it's been 2 months, you're about to go live. Is this the right one still? How should we change this? And we kind of keep that motion going. From a statistic perspective, we 6x'd our average contract value with this motion, and our win rate went from like 20% to 33% once we implemented it.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, but like, yeah, two sales reps. So it's been great to experiment, but, you know, the change management was much simpler, I guess. That's our unfair advantage, being quite small and nimble.
What do you guys
still
think?
I mean, the results are awesome, and the fact that you're thinking about all those things is great. I kind of wonder, and maybe this is a question for you, John, on the concept of success planning. How closely do you, you know, pin your customers to the, let's say, like the concept of value that they had coming in, and then you fast forward 6 months or 12 months down the line? Like, are you adjusting your success plans based on what's happened? Are you always pinning to what the original expectations are?
Yeah, I like to think of this as, like, honestly, like our success planning, and in general, success planning should be like any relationship that you build, right? You have your first date, you kind of just set out what you're looking for. You set out why you bought, why you said yes, why you swipe left or right. And as you kind of grow and you get to know people, you have to absolutely adjust not only your expectations, but also your asks. And you have to come in with a decent frame of mind that this is going to change, right? I mean, parents going to get cancer, or they're going to lose their job, or they're going to get a promotion, or they're going to have to move to Europe, right? All of these things, it cannot be static and stationary. And I think where the problem has come in with success planning is that it is a one sheet template that, you know, some website sent to a CSM somewhere, and they filled out their forms, and then it lives on Salesforce, and that's just utter bullshit. The truest form of a success plan is aligning on a daily or whatever cadence basis you can with the outcomes of their business, not with what they are paying you to do, right? Because we are a conduit for the businesses that we are supporting. And that's a broad statement. There are some particulars and specifics that we can really dig into. But if we are not calling success and defining success and requiring success that doesn't drive their outcomes, meaning, like, for, you know, if Amazon's your customer, it's, you know, attachment rates in shopping carts, or it's AWS shard configuration, or whatever they're doing, right? If you're not aligning with meeting those expectations, then your success plan doesn't matter. You cannot build something that will drive to durable or sustainable growth unless you are actually aligned with what those are. So my QBRs, or as Christy has literally taught me, customer outcomes review, CORs, have been, it is saying, like, what's changed in your business? And if there's white space between how they use us and how we as experts of our product see they can use us to drive their growth and their outcomes, that's where we fit in. And that's where the CSM works with the services team or the sales team or the marketing team or any of these other organizations to say, yeah, you're meeting your goals at 80% of whatever it is, however, whatever marker you want to use. But did you know you could be doing X, Y, and Z? Here's a case study. Here's a webinar. Here's a workspace. Here's something that we can do that will actually, like, because I know your business. And this is where, this is the problem I think that I have with kind of the market that we're at, where CSMs get cut really easily, or we move books of business really easily, because just like dating, like, you don't, sometimes you know you're going to marry the person on the first date, but by and large, it takes a really long time to get to know that person enough to say, this is value. And that first year contract, it is so hard to say that we have met expectations within 1 year. You need 3, 4, 5 years. And unfortunately, CSMs don't do a very good job of sticking with one account for 5 years, which, for a number of reasons, right? So if we're not actually looking at the maturity of our customer and the knowledge that they have in their business, and our CSMs deeply understanding their specific customer outcomes, then we're only going to be talking surface level. It's going to be really shallow. And the offerings and the outcomes and the support that we're bringing with these success plans, whatever we write down, is going to be incredibly shallow. So day one, use the platform. And then day 795 or whatever it is, like, you're scouring the S10, you know, filings and understanding CEO metrics and all these things, but it has to accumulate and grow. Also, Christy's dog is in the YouTube for those of you watching.
Charlie.
Hey, I
Charlie.
Think that my neighbor's dogs are making a lot of noise because it looks like the eclipse is probably hitting us in the next, like, few minutes. Yeah. So wow. All the neighborhood dogs are barking, and so she's having a little bit of a freak out.
All right, we're going to wrap it up on that note. We're going to go watch the eclipse. And I really like this format. Michael and Alex, thank you for joining us. Like, Alex, some really cool stuff that you're working on and growing Nisaza. I'll say it normally.
Nisaza. Yeah,
hit the applause for Nisaza. That, man. You nailed it. You hit the applause.
Yeah. Totally nailed it. Michael, you know, the strongest leaders are the ones that are expose themselves and make themselves a little vulnerable and want to grow and learn. And that's what you did. And I really appreciate it. Sounds like you guys are already crushing it, but I appreciate your coming to us and letting us talk about the topics here today. So, John, this is kind of the format we wanted to do, right? This is what we were talking about. This was a good first.
Wait, you guys had a talk without me?
Yeah, we did. We'll fill you in later. Yep.
Awkward.
Okay, guys, have a great week, everybody.
All right.